Blog Talk Radio.
This is what it is, okay? I said, empty your mind. Be formless, shapeless, like water. Now, you put water into a cup, it becomes the cup. You put water into a bottle, it becomes the bottle. You put it in a teapot, it becomes the teapot. Now, water can flow or it can crash. Be water, my friend.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to enter this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man, what is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor. All hail funk and lesson. Sweet tongue, grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold. Born in a cosmos where no time and space do exist. Vibe in the midst of the chaos. Mortals label me as a lock.
You're traveling to another radio show. A broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, Divas, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
Howdy, howdy, ho, folks. Welcome to yet another funky, fascinating edition of Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk, the Midweek and Review edition, or dare I say, the Afro Punk edition. We have a lot to get into, a lot to discuss. Perhaps the uncanny himself, the uncanny Daryl B, I just text messaged him. He said he wanted to come through because he, too, was in full attendance at the Afro Punk Festival this past weekend, the 23rd and the 24th. At Commodore Barry Park in Brooklyn, New York. Brooklyn, the planet Brooklyn. So, folks, we're going to go to a quick groove. We're going to discuss Afropunk. I would also implore our listenership to listen to last week's episode. We preempted this past weekend because we were at the festival. But this Wednesday, the past Wednesday, I interviewed Jocelyn Cooper, the high priestess of the Afropunk Festival. She manages the affair. And a lot to discuss. We had the Inner Sanctum with us in full attendance, so it should be pretty festive just in discussing it. Very excited. So I'm going to play a groove from Afropunk. D'Angelo was the main event on the 24th. I didn't get a chance to see him. I'll explain that. But let's say it's CP time for D'Angelo. It is what it is. So, anyway, without further ado, going to a quick groove, performing perhaps my favorite song. I played it a hell of a lot on this broadcast. This is She's Always in My Hair. You know who was the original person that penned that. And this is D'Angelo's version of His Royal Badness's cut. We'll be right back. Let's groove.
My sunshine turns rain. Whatever my hopes and dreams turn in the wrong direction, she's always there. Tell me how good she is. Oh,
song. Wow.
Let me tell you how it was. Check it out. All the time.
All my life. All my life.
Just a taste, folks. You're not ready. You're not ready. Not for Afropunk, not for Afro Nerd. Nevertheless, the show must commence. Without further ado, live, beaming him back. Beaming him back from Afropunk. He is the captain. Captain, you're needed on the bridge. Let's get to it, sir.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
And that was exactly what I was doing at Afropunk. Seeking out new life, for sure. Let's go. Let's get started, gentlemen.
Uh-oh. I think he deems himself out when he was introducing me to that cap.
Sorry about that. I was speaking, but nobody heard me.
Okay.
All right, so Daryl, I know your time is limited. Give us your thoughts on Afropunk. You were there twice.
Thoughts on Afropunk in between planes coming in low, the U.S. Open, and stuff crashing all around me. That's me. Thoughts on Afropunk. Good to great show. All right. Our only real problem was the last day. Alright,
yeah.
The last day with D'Angelo, but I sent you guys the link, and if you guys go to okplayer.com, you'll see D'Angelo playing with the Roots. Our problems were much more personal on that front. But it didn't take away from a fantastic couple of days. And let me just tell you this, okay? First, it's the most dancing you two have ever seen me do. And I got you guys through those crowds like a champ. but with that being said, all this week, what I've been playing, I've been putting it up on Facebook, all the stuff that I've downloaded, that I've bought, and I've been playing all week. I've been playing Unlocking the Troop. I've been playing Sunny Gang. I've been playing Leanna Lavernus. Let's see. I've been playing, I found a couple of WB Bond mixes. I found the Africa Latina mix, you know. On Monday, I was rocking the Twisted Nation shirt I picked up, you know. It was great. It was great. There was a lot of people there, and it wasn't simply Afro punks. It was white punks. It was Asian punks. It was Arab punks. It was Latin punks. It was punks from all around the world, Australia, England. We were all there. We were all rocking. And the only problem we really had outside of the D'Angelo thing was that on the final day, so many acts we wanted to see were up against one another, which led to a couple of Daryl incidents running through crowds and cutting and stuff like that. But, you know, and let's not give short shrift. Sharon Jones and the Daft Kings on Saturday, and on Sunday, Fishbone. Both of those acts turn the place out. Folks, if you have Afropunk, if you haven't gone to the site, if you haven't listened to Afro Nerd or the Captain tell you to check out this site and check out this music, then there's no help in you. You don't want to be helped. Yeah, stay with your Nicki Minaj, stay with your 2 Chainz, stay with that stuff. I like some of their stuff, but then this was a communal bonding episode. And I bet you all of this, and I didn't even talk about Tamakali. I didn't even talk about Michelle and the Cello. I didn't even talk about freaking the Ooh, Gimme More's. Yo, when Jocelyn comes out, tell her thank you. Thank you for getting us hooked up with this thing. Thank you. And I will definitely be at it again next year. Afternoon?
Yeah, before I go all in, Captain, I'm curious about your thoughts, because this, I believe this is your first attendance to this thing. It's a bit of a spectacle. It could be jarring for certain people. We had guests with us. Now, the guests that we had from the Inner Sanctum, they fit in like anything else. They were comfortable. They got it. I had other guests that were a little bit taken aback and kind of just couldn't get it. So what are we working with here? Tell us what your thoughts and, you know, what do you see with the future of this thing?
Well, first thing I must say, according to the media now, media outlets, there were also a few articles. They say 57% of the people that attend Afropunk are either college grads or have some college. So there's something to be said about that, because the crowd is well-behaved. All right? This is something we have to talk about. You went to large functions and you see certain things happening left and right. Maybe having an honest conversation, maybe that has a little something to do with it. I'm just saying. Now that I got that out of the way. When I first arrived, it wasn't really quite my thing when I first walked in, because the people were rather earthy looking. You're getting some background noise there.
Mute me for the next.
Okay.
Okay.
I muted Carol there. Got it.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
When I first arrived there, it wasn't really quite my thing, because the people, you know, had that earthy type of look. And that lasted with me for about 5 minutes. But it was nice to peruse the park, walk around, and take in everything. Then you adapt to your surroundings. And then it was Bob's your uncle from there. It was all good. You know, people well-behaved, different type of people, black, white, you know, a couple of Asian people walking around. It's a good look. It was just an entirely good look from the people's perspective. You had performers out there that knew how to perform. You had a lot of different type of music going on. You had different kind of food. It was just good. It's the way it's supposed to be when people gather. Everyone's respectful. You know, you don't have to worry about, oh, look at this one, look at that one, look at this one. Maybe at first you're like, well, he looks a little weird. You're not used to that. But it's not like you felt threatened. When you go to some function, sometimes you're like, okay, do I got to ball up my fists here? What am I doing here anyway? No, that's not the case. It's not about that. It's a very strong movement. You feel the energy in a monolith. You understand? So it's excellent. It's definitely excellent. A lot of diversity going on out there. A beautiful thing. Once you warm up, of course. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Yeah, you know, I think this is my third Afropunk attendance. And I think the first time I had the first time I attended, I believe I had that same feeling. I felt like these are a bunch of weirdos, you know. But at the same time, if you are a New Yorker and you've gone through the Greenwich Village, you would see a similar thing. So you dispel that right away, and then you just kind of fit in. There's so many different types there. I mean, there's a bougie element to it. There's also, like the captain said, there's an earth tone element to it. A lot of attractive women in with natural hair, physiques on point, if you're going to be talking honestly. I mean, there were a few slobs there, too. They did have T-shirts that said no fat phobia, no transphobia. So there's a couple of things that, you know, they have an agenda. It's definitely a liberal agenda. That's pretty much a rock and roll thing. I think the captain has a story attached to that that was a little funny in a way, funny and disheartening at the same time, where, you know, I thought liberals were supposed to be open-minded. Not always, but that's just a political thing. The de Blasio family, the first family of New York, were in attendance, and they're earth-tone people. So you know that, especially Dante, with his huge afro, this is his people. So of course he was going to be there. So that was a good look, politics aside. Sponsors are coming about. I was able to get a pair of free sneakers, which is cool. I'm a sneakerhead, along with being a comic book collector and a whole bunch of other hobbies that I'm into. So that's always cool, getting quote-unquote free swag. The artistry, what the captain and what Daryl talked about, you're talking about an expansive landscape for black music. Ice-T and Body Count giving you hard metal. Body Count is a 20-plus-year-old band, so these are veterans. He did what he's supposed to do, an effective performance. Bad Brains, legendary punk group. And what made this special is that Corey Glover from Living Color performed with them. Murs, who's a rapper, a hip-hop artist in his own right, and is also with the White Men Dingoes. We played their music. We played their music on this show, and I probably played it again. He also performed with Bad Brains. So there's a lot of legendary things going on. Michelle Ndege Ocello, she was there. Alice Smith shouting out Bison. He was asking about her. She did a phenomenal job. We played the music here. We played Alice Smith. I think last week we played Alice Smith. Leanne LaHavas, who was a Prince protege, she was there. And the highlight, obviously, Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings. And again, we're talking about a really diverse genres of music that under normal circumstances should not work. But it works stupendously. We have someone who's essentially doing 60s soul revival music, which is what she is doing. A cancer survivor, a recent cancer survivor, and dancing like I don't know what. Energy I don't know what, and she's pushing 60, showing the younger folks what to do. She actually pulled a young man on stage. This is why I say a lot on this show, is that when the realness is there, the young folks cannot front. When the realness is there, for some reason, all that phoniness goes out the window. When you see the BETs and that kind of thing, the Minstrel Awards, and you see someone like Al Green come through, or someone like Cameo, or any of those other legendary artists, or Jeffrey Osborne, the young folks, listen, again, 2 Chainz and Rihanna and Nicki Minaj, they can't hold a candle. So when the realness comes through, something happens where the younger folks, they comport themselves and they stop playing phony. So this is what has happened. I was just glad that my folks, shouting out Sally V, she's listening, that my folks were in attendance, and I could tell they had a good time. We brushed off all of our airs and got funky. Our freak flags were flying. We're going to do it again, undoubtedly. And Sally's listening. I'm going to buy a top hat. I'm going to buy a top hat with my John Lydon shades that I got compliments on. Quite a few people will like talk about my shades. So I'm gonna wear. I'm gonna get one of those. I gotta fit in a little bit more the next time around. So I'm slowly becoming more of a convert. I see Bison. Bison says, "I hope D'Angelo wasn't high." Sir, I can't answer that. We tried to stick it out as long as we could. The gentleman showed up. The gentleman showed up an hour. Footage of his performance on YouTube, and Afropunk TV has a YouTube presence, so you can definitely check out the performances. He was doing his thing. Listen, I'm disappointed that I missed him perform She's Always in My Hair, because I like his version almost as much as I like Prince's version. And we had really good, you know, really good positioning to be able to see him the way we need to see him. But he showed up an hour later, and like he said, he might have been high. That's what some of the performers do. Let's keep it 100. That might have been a distinct possibility. I really can't say any more about this. I just want this movement to continue. The captain may want to go into his story about when we were wearing Afro Nerd. Well, I wasn't. I wore that on Saturday. But God bless the Inner Sanctum. They were wearing Afro Nerd advertising shirts, Afro Nerd radio show shirts, and it touched my heart that they did that. I really was appreciative of the gang getting together to push our agenda. The agenda is very similar. Think about black people, really expanding the black image. You know, heck, chocolate freaks and weirdos. That's cool. I can go with that. Shouting out Angelo Moore. So I'm appreciative that the gang was there, and next year we're going to do it up big with my top hat. That or maybe the Cat in a Hat top hat, I might wear that. We'll see
That's
how crazy
what you need
I can
to
get.
Wear. That's what you need to wear.
I might go there. That with my shades, the shades of World
yep.
Cap, I might have to be a fool. Especially if, you know, His Royal Badness, which might be 2015. You know what? Who else would have been good to be there? Funkadelic. George
that
would have
been great. Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo. That would have been it.
Tavi ain't ready for that.
No, man.
She hears me. She's not ready for that. She's not ready for Prince, really. If she saw that him or George Clinton and that whole, that's like a client. That is a circus on stage. They would fit perfectly for Afropunk. I gotta put that out there to John.
Boosie Collins and all of them.
Oh man. Okay. I will go away from the velvet top hat and get the Cat in the Hat top hat. I might wear that next year. I'm going there. We gotta be a little freaky this time, Cat. Let me bring in. Well, actually, you know what? Tell the story.
All right. So, when we were walking through the crowd, all right, following the great Daryl B's wisdom through the crowd, Daryl was already ahead of us, so he laid the way. You know, he knows the terrain very well. So it was Marlon, who was actually married to Sally V. That's her husband. Sally Ventura, Inner Sanctum. There was a woman that stopped us because she saw the Afro Nerd shirts, and she wanted to know, what's that about? So Marlon took it upon himself, and he started talking. And he was doing very well. He was doing a very good job. I was just sitting back, you know, just watching him. So he's doing a good job. He knows how to speak. Go ahead. Go on with your bad self. Then she got to the point where she wanted a little more information. So that's where I took over, and then I told her, you know, it's a conservative. And once I said conservative, she was ready to get up from her seat. A jolt of energy just came out. She said, you're conservative. I said, conservative and independent views on the show. Then she went, oh, okay. But how are you going to be conservative? I said, conservative and independent. It's not ultra, ultra, ultra conservative. She says, oh, okay. I like the premise then. Then I gave her a business card, and she said, yeah, I will probably check this out. I'll check this out, you know. But why do you have to be conservative? Oh, boy, that's what it was. I agree with you, Sir Afro, there.
Yeah, that part didn't – well, listen, again, I got to explain a couple of things about this thing. Afropunk, it even goes deeper than just the festival itself. You have to talk about the surroundings. This is liberal central, this particular area. We're talking about Commodore Barry Park. We're talking about downtown Brooklyn. It's a area that's very pricey. It's gentrified. The attendees were predominantly folks of color, those of African, Asian descent, and, of course, you had your white hipsters in attendance. And again, the comfort level, I mean, you have people where your freak flag flies high. Everyone moves with the same beat pretty much. The educated factor is very much alive. I mean, that element is there. One of the few venues where I'm going to go to a mostly minority event and not really feel like I have to watch myself so closely, where I have to really, you know, it's rarefied air, ladies and gentlemen. It's rarefied air because we know we've already heard events shouting out Suge Knight at the VMA Awards. He got shot in his butthole, what, 6 times, Captain?
Yes, sir.
I mean, you can't go. Chris Brown, the photograph, and that's another thing we'll talk about later on with the hashtag campaign. What if I had gotten shot? I think, what is the name of that campaign? What if I had been shot or something like that? He has the mugshot. His picture is so radically different than when it came into the game 10 years ago. What happened to that Wrigley's gum bow tie, non-threatening black person? Now he looks like he's a Crip, or pardon me, a Blood. But anyway, one of the few events that you can go to that's mostly black and brown and white and Asian, and it's actually Native Americans were there. Everyone's grooving. I'm Steve Bison right on time. Young Jeezy might have to do, what do they say on the street? A bullet for having a gun at a Wiz Khalifa concert, I think somewhere in California. So we've seen certain affairs that are mostly black affairs, and you're taking a chance. You're not really coming across that at Afropunk, but this is Chocolate Freaks and Weirdos. Whole different scene. In the area, you will see, and I've seen on Fulton Avenue in Brooklyn, you will see black barbershop. Well, first of all, black-owned, black-themed businesses right next to white businesses. You will see a black barbershop right next to a funky white restaurant. So it's far from Ferguson, Missouri. Everyone seems to be grooving in a certain way. So it's a different affair. But there's a whole thing. There's a whole thing that goes with the Afropunk thing. It's not really just the music. It's the people. It's the atmosphere. It's a lot to unpack. And the music is out there. From punk, heavy metal, you name it, they got it. We have a call. I'm going to go back to the uncanny Daryl B, and then I'm going to go to the phones. Daryl, any other thoughts you have on Afropunk?
Yeah, I'm gonna pop out after I make this statement, but essentially Afropunk is our mission statement, all right? I'm not as conservative as you guys are, yet I listen and respect your views. You guys listen and respect mine, all right? That whole scene outside of Captain's little incident, all right, was almost total respect, at least where we were, the people we spoke to. You know, the vendors we spoke to, total respect. It didn't matter how you thought. It didn't matter or what you did. It didn't matter orientation. It didn't matter race. As long as you were there to have a good time and listen to good music and not mess with anybody else, hey, we were all vibing in the crowd. We were all celebrating. We were partying with people from Canada. Shout out to my Vancouver peeps. People from Australia. People from England. People from Germany, people from Africa, of course, you know.
South Africa.
We were partying. Yep, those 2 days, we were holding an international giant party out there. And it didn't matter if you were Democrat or Republican. It didn't matter if you were conservative or liberal. It didn't matter male, female. It didn't matter race. It didn't matter straight, gay, other. It didn't matter. If you were there to have fun, we all had fun. So, Ms. Cooper, it was a blast. It was a total and complete blast. Can't wait for the next one. Guys, good luck with the rest of the show. I'm going to be dancing out because my lunch break is, like, over. So, enjoy, guys.
All right, man, always. Appreciate it. The uncanny Daryl B., as always. Let's go to the phones. He was going into something I wanted to get into. The fact that Afropunk represents this diversity, and then when you come up and say, well, listen, our show is also of a different path, beating to a different drum, and it's alternative, and it's breaking the black monolith, she still was like, well, I mean, you're in a place that's supposed to deconstruct all of this, and yet she had a problem with the conservative slash independent thing. That's what becomes problematic. So you're still coming across folks that have, well, here, at this place, this is normal. So at the chocolate freaks and weirdos, this place is normal. But if you're conservative and in our space, you're still an outsider. Still. So it's really comical depending on what perspective you're coming from. But other than that, next year I'm wearing a cat in a hat, top hat, Captain, I think. Let's go to the phones. We're going to test it out next year, 2015. Going to the phones. 347, welcome to Afronaut Radio. Tell us who you are, where you're calling from. What's up?
Well, hello. This is Sally B. calling from Manhattan.
Hey.
Hey, Sally.
What's up?
All right.
You tell us. You sound more mature, too. You sound mature as a married woman. Your voice is a little bit, you know.
I'm pretty sure I still sound like a 12-year-old on the phone.
No,
you
don't.
Sound about 16
Go ahead.
Now. Go ahead.
All right.
What were your thoughts?
At the beginning, I must say, I was a little hesitant to go because I, as you guys know, don't have much patience for nonsense. So I tend to avoid large crowds of people because, for the most part, when there's a lot of people, something always happens. So, you know, just because I wanted to support you guys, and I'm like, okay, what, you know, let me just get out of work a little early and let's just go over there. And it was surprisingly fun. I actually thought I was going to be grumpy and bitchy the whole time, but I wasn't. I had fun. The only thing, two things that kind of bothered me was that this man, D'Angelo, we were standing there for like over an hour waiting for him to perform. And to be honest, it's not that important. I don't even know who the guy is. I mean, if I see his picture, maybe I don't want to sound ignorant, but I really don't know who the guy is. So I was just, you know, wanted to see because he was the big guest of the night or whatever. And then the other thing, when people got a little too comfortable and put their, you know, weeds out and started smoking weed and stuff like that, that was the only two things I didn't like. But other than that, everything was good, and I will definitely go again next year.
Yeah, well, listen, I'm going to school you on D'Angelo. You'll get more information on that. As far as, listen, it's a concert. Everything is not going to be perfect. I mean, unfortunately, that's to be expected anywhere. So that's the only drawback. But I appreciate the fact that, like you said, everyone was pretty much calm, cordial, a lot of communing with folk, you know, meeting so many different types of people, very open-mindedness. But, hey, you know, that thing, when it comes to music, rock music especially, you can expect somebody's going to try to get high. So that's, you know,
yeah,
I
definitely.
Can't call that.
Sure. I was expecting that to happen, to be honest. I was expecting people, you know, to do that. So I'm not going to hold that as a total negative aspect of the whole thing because I will totally go. If I had had a bad time or that really bothered me that much, I wouldn't be saying I want to go next time. But no, it was because I expected something to go down. I didn't expect something to go wrong, but I had that back feeling. I had that in the back of my head, like, you know, I was a little, at the beginning, I was a little, you know, uptight or what have you, but then after a little while, you do realize that it's not the same crowd that you will find if you go, obviously, to a Rihanna concert or a Rihanna concert, or you, if you go to what's this other chick with the big booty, Nicki Minaj concert. Things like that. I wouldn't go. I wouldn't go if they gave me, if they pay me to go. Well, depending on how much they pay me, I guess everybody has price. But no, if they pay me to go, it would have to be a very large amount of money for me to go there, because those are places I would absolutely avoid. So you can see it was not that crowd of people. It was not that crowd that was not at, that was at Afropunk. It was a different crowd. It was a different vibe. Everybody wanted to enjoy themselves. Nobody was looking for trouble. No, nobody, you know, jumped out if you accidentally bumped them, and things like that. So it was definitely a very refreshing experience, because I usually don't like to go out where there's a lot of people, because I don't like, you know, that whole, if thing goes, something goes wrong, somebody bumping into you, somebody violating your personal space and all of that. I'm very funky with that. But it was very cool. It was very nice.
Well, the beauties that were walking around, they could violate my personal space, personally. I was okay with that. But next year we're going to do it bigger, I suspect. Sally, as always, got more calls. Continue supporting us. We appreciate it. Congratulations again. And, you know, keep holding us down. We appreciate it.
Of course, always. Always, guys.
All right. Hold on. All right. We got another call. And after the call, Kathy, we're going to go to a groove. 703, welcome to Africa Radio. Tell us who you are, where you're calling from.
Hey, it's the Black Conservative.
Hey, Bison.
Hey, Bison. What's going on, gentlemen? Hey, D-Bird and Captain, you guys need to step up your review skills of a concert. You talking about walking through the mud. I want to know, one, how were the women? Two, how were the acts? And three, is it free? And four, next year they're going to, you know, have the same thing, so I can jump on a train and come up there.
All right, listen, let us know. We're going to do it. If you come up, we'll do it even bigger. Okay, this is what the deal was. It was a free concert, but they were dependent upon donations. Donations are about 20, what was it, Captain, like 20 bucks, 25 bucks?
I would say it's about 20 bucks. Yeah, it was about 20 bucks.
20 bucks, but listen, 20 bucks to play for what, 30 to 60 acts of this caliber, you're not even sweating that. I paid 40 bucks for a fast pass, which allowed me to bypass all the lines. So I was able to go in seconds without dealing with nonsense. So I didn't have any qualms paying. Because of the amount of acts and to alleviate yourself of the grief. Now, as far as the women, I will email you photographs of the women that were in attendance, but you're going to see women of all ethnicities, but mostly black and brown women, wearing fashionable attire. Bodies were on point. You know, we do have a certain brand here, Bison, so I'm trying to be a little delicate. But the women were very attractive, and the fact that they wore, you know, natural hairstyles, you know, really, like, I mean, like 1970s attractive, the way that the type of beauty that we do not see anymore. That's what makes it fascinating.
Is it the kind of event you can bring, like, a chair and sit on the lawn and watch? Was everything punched on the street?
Yeah. People, they had chairs, they had blankets. That's one thing that I said I should bring next year is that, because I saw people doing that. They had blankets, they had chairs. I mean, listen, we had spirits there. So once I got a little lubricated, to be honest with you, I was I was fine. Once I got lubricated, I was good. You know, during the Fishbone concert, there were young hot and tenders, as they say, that were crowd surfing, Bison. So, I mean, you know, people were letting their freak flag fly. So, you know, that's what you want. Lord knows who's going to be next year, because Sharon Jones, she wore me out. She wore me out. She's, you know, you can imagine. She's the female James Brown. So the weather was, it looked like it was going to rain in the beginning, but the rain, it didn't really happen. The weather was perfect. It wasn't too hot. It wasn't too cold. A lot of quote-unquote swag to buy, great T-shirts, a lot of businesses on the come up. I mean, you know, again, I got free sneakers. How can I complain? Beautiful women, liquidation, spirits, and free swag and beautiful women. What else do you want?
The thing I'm worried about is this thing is
and nonviolent Negroes and nonviolent Negroes. What more do you want?
I think that's a perfect storm. What's the next level? Will it become Lollapalooza? You know how these things go. You know, once they reach a certain level, they're going to have to reach out to commercial vendors to pay for those acts. I mean, it seems great because it's in its infancy. And when it has to go to the next level. Will they, like, move to a different space, like maybe Central Park or something? I mean, I don't know. I mean, I hope it stays like it is, because I used to watch on YouTube when Janelle Monáe and others used to go there a few years ago. But it's growing. Eventually, it's going to outgrow the space where it is.
Well, you know, I spoke to, if you heard the last broadcast, I spoke to Jocelyn about it. And, listen, she's definitely touring this thing. There's going to be one in Oakland. I think there's going to be one in Philly. So, and I might actually go to some of the other ones that are out of state. I said, heck, you need to have this as a UK, an Afro-punk UK, Afro-punk Africa, because Africa has a big punk movement. I spoke to a young lady that was from Joho, which is Johannesburg. So, I mean, where this could go, I don't know. The sponsors are starting to grow, starting to get bigger. I saw Marley sponsoring, you know, Marley speakers, which I really was unaware of. Marley, I suspect, is going to be the next Dre Beats. So there's I could definitely conceive of it being bigger. And also, shouting out Sergio Mims, Sergio sent me an article from Forbes. Forbes went into detail. The article was written by a friend of the show. What's the gentleman's name from Bold as Love? Rob Fields. Rob Fields wrote an article for Forbes that went into great detail about the financial aspect of this. And when it was upwards of 60,000 to 70,000 people for this weekend. Now, you got 60,000 or 70,000 people of a certain economic standard, Bison, that definitely debunk stereotypes, and he's saying this is the money train, and corporate America is very slow to grasp the idea that black folks aren't just hip-hop. So it's definitely getting bigger and bigger. Spin Magazine wrote something on it, Rolling Stone, New York Times, Washington Post, Huffington Post, everybody is getting on. It's a slow boil. But from what I saw this past weekend, you couldn't even move. It got to a point where you physically could not move. So it's going down. It's going down. So actually, it may become – it's more personal for us now because we're still on the ground floor. Who knows what may happen? Like you said, it may end up being a Lollapalooza. Blackface bought Lollapalooza. But I loved it. I loved it. If you come up next time, man, let us know. You know, it's going to be hot and heavy. I can tell you, each year, the acts become more impressive. I mean, Michelle and Deggio Cello, Bad Brains, Body Count, Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings, D'Angelo, Fishbone. I mean,
what do you think the average age, do you think it was the most of the crowd was under 30? I mean, I saw pictures of all ages, but was it generally a young crowd? The reason I'm asking, it seems like a younger version of, down in D.C. we had the Capital Jazz Festival, which is basically an R&B jazz thing spread over the weekend with similar crowd numbers. So I'm just trying to get a gauge of, you know, what the
18 to 50.
That's a good question. What would you say, Captain? What would you say on that?
I would say the age range seemed from about 18 to 50. At a glance.
Yeah.
At a glance. What you had.
You couldn't just say it was exclusively young people, because you had a lot of hipsters over there. You know, you had a lot of people. Yeah, I will say this. It's a hip crowd. So the hipness takes away a lot of decades on you. Because there's a lot of old dudes, but funky old dudes. So, I mean, it's hard, you know, it's not for someone who's tight in the ass, as they would say. That's coming from me. And I'm the master of the tight butt. And I and you see me, I'm talking about buying top hats. That's telling you something.
Oh,
I know Sam's going to want to come just to see that. I got to get in.
You weren't too close to that weed, were you?
I was very close to it. Now, I don't imbibe. You can tell. I believe in absolute clarity. But there's no way to avoid it. Those guys are raining. The men and women were raining smoke on you. I hated it. I tried to move. I couldn't move. I undoubtedly got a contact. Not my thing. They were businessmen passing cards around for pot cookies. That's the next thing. That's the next thing. You know, they're working hard, Bison, to make New York like Colorado and Washington. And this is the crowd for that.
Yeah,
but not my thing. I don't imbibe, but I could not. You could not help but being caught up in a smoke and in a cloud.
Well, let me ask you this last thing. I know you got to move on to the groove, but if Afropunk was held the same weekend as New York Comic Con, which one would you go to?
Ooh, whoa. Honestly,
figure out how to hiccup. You got to hit both. You got to just figure
it
out.
Yeah, I would try to hit both, but Afropunk would probably edge it.
That's all I need.
They serve and buy, you know. But then again, I think they serve drinks at Comic-Con, too. You know something, now that I think about it, there were women, lovely, hot, and tenders at the New York Comic-Con with drinks in their hands with the comic books there. So, you know what? I can't answer that question right now.
you have to go downstairs to get the drinks.
Afropunk edges. Seeing some lovely women of color in their natural state and natural bodies. They had a couple of Slavs there, Bison, a couple of Slavs. But for the most part, they were 100%ers. So I would go toward Afropunk. All right, listen, as promised, let's go to a groove, go to a different, switch things around a little bit, and we'll discuss Money Mayweather and 50 Cent. Speaking of Fishbone, Ma and Pa. We'll be right back. Let's groove.
Money.
ska punk legends, Angela Moore and the Boys, Fishbone. That was Ma and Pa, which they actually performed live at Afropunk. And just to kind of clarify things with Bison, you know, I'm all about having a sharp mental acuity. You know, I had like 2 or 3 beers or something like that. But with pot, you know, there was a gentleman, as I mentioned, he had a card about pot cakes and pot cookies, and he tapped me on the shoulder, and he said, because I was rushing to a merchandising booth, and he stops me. He says, "Hey, you know, you need this." And I turned around. I said, "Listen," I looked at it. I said, "Listen, man, you know they're shooting." He's a man of color. I said, "You know they're shooting us in the streets. Don't you think we need to have a clear mind?" So I went Afro Nerd. I did go Afro Nerd on him. But he didn't say what I was talking about. I said, "Listen, this is not the time to be weeded out where your senses are dulled and people, you know, we may have a difference of opinion as to how some of these men of color are getting shot, but they are getting shot, whether it's from, quote-unquote, popo or from their own brethren. But either way, you need to have some degree of mental awareness. And pot is not the answer, but as the great Sally V has mentioned, it was unavoidable. Those folks are raining that smoke on you, man. So I had to just deal with it, and, you know, I moved where I could. But, you know, at a certain point, you know what? Whatever. I'm going to groove to my band. So we will table this again the following summer. So, Captain, we got about an hour remaining, a lot more show to get through. I want to talk about this growing controversy. I think we actually spoke about it as we were leaving Afropunk on Sunday. This thing with one-time friends, now no enemies, Floyd Mayweather, phenomenal boxing athlete, and I'm not going to call him a hip-hop artist, a rapper, Curtis 50 Cent Jackson. War words, and essentially 50 Cent has challenged Floyd Mayweather to a reading contest. I think he wants him to read a page from Harry Potter live on Jimmy Kimmel's show. Charlamagne Tha God from the Breakfast Club, local radio personality, he played a clip of a drop in the radio business, you know, an on-air shout-out or on-air commercial when Mayweather was a guest, and he was reading, and he really could not read. You know, he appears to be dyslexic. But I'm seeing other video that kind of counters that. I think he was reading something else where he read with a certain degree of proficiency. So we don't know who to believe, but I want the captain to weigh in on this, and I'll back him up. But I have my thoughts. It's not the best look for either gentleman. Not the best look, but I'll wax on it after the captain. What are your thoughts about this? This feud over this reading issue, or poking fun at someone who appears to have some kind of disability.
Well, here's the thing. All right. Well, we know what 50 Cent is about. He drives on controversy, and for at this given time, you know, this is just more or less a publicity stunt to bolster whatever he's doing. You know, that's what he does. You know, that's just what 50 Cent does at this given time. So now let's understand this when it comes to boxers. When it comes to boxers, you really don't want a boxer to be Mr. Super, Super Duper educated. All right, the only real educated boxer that we have at this given time is Klitschko, and he does real well at this given point. He was trained, you know, underneath the Soviet Union. He learned the sports, as they would say, the sweet science of boxing and the art form. You see guys that box today, they only have like a punch, or they may have good feet. Klitschko learned boxing from the science and the art form. When he was younger, he wasn't any good because the boxers were more talented that he was fighting, mainly black guys. But anyway, they were more talented. He does very well now because the boxers actually suck. misunderstand something else pertaining to boxing. What drives boxing? Poverty, believe it or not. This is one time where poverty actually drives the venue here. All right? When we look at a lot of these Mexican fighters now, they have horror stories that they come from. But that's the reason why they're good, because the poverty actually drives the talent. It allows you to hone the talent because you don't have anything else. If you're highly educated and you box, what do? Let's say you have 90 credits and you're working towards your bachelor's. You get hit in your face a few times. You say, get out of here with this, man. Go get me a job. I'm finishing my bachelor's. I'm going to go get my master's. And rightfully so, because you're educated. But when you're poverty, coming from a poverty type of situation, poverty stricken, horror stories, you push because you don't have anything else. When you look at someone like Mayweather, where is he coming from? When you look at someone like Bernard Hopkins, we know the backdrop on his story. Mike Tyson, we look at the backdrop on his story. But here's the thing. As far as I know, Mike Tyson can read. As far as I know, Bernard Hopkins can read. So this more or less says we're in a matrix. And when you're in a matrix, in order to operate at a baseline level, that's something we talk about here on Afro Nerd Radio, you have to at least get to the baseline level, and then you can go from there to higher and better things. You need to be able to read. Now, for those people that say, and I've heard educated people say this, well, he makes a lot of money. What does he need to read for? You're missing the point. You are entirely missing the point. You have people that come to this country, immigrants, and according to statistics, the ones that somewhat grasp English, they don't have to grasp it like an English teacher, because a lot of Americans don't speak English very well, but you need to be able to understand the language and speak it, right, and be able to read. These immigrants do pretty well. The ones that don't do that, they get pigeonholed. So they need to get to a baseline level as far as the English is concerned in order to move in the matrix. Mayweather, God bless him, I like the way he fights and everything else. If this is actually the case where he cannot read, and that's what they're saying right now, he has the money, he has the power to be able to bring somebody by his abode and teach him how to read so he can get to the baseline level. And also, too, from the Afro-Nerd perspective, it doesn't really look good when you have the black man making fun of another black man. Doesn't look good to us. Forget about everybody else as far as black people are concerned. All right? Doesn't look good to have the black man making fun of another black man who can't read. It just does not look good. And we also know, talking about something else now, all right, not to go off on a tangent, but it's tangentially related. There's a tendency for these certain type of individuals, they have the proclivity towards this act that I'm going to mention. When you have a lot of money and you have no education whatsoever, what is the first thing that you do? I'm not talking about you didn't finish college or you only have a high school diploma or if you had a bachelor's and you started going to get your master's and then you stopped. No, I'm talking about those guys that like nothing. They don't have anything. They can't really read or write, but they have a lot of money. You do run into these individuals. Why are they always talking about their money? To hide the fact that they cannot function at the baseline level. So the first thing they will do is, hey, here's my money. Yeah, I'm paid, I'm this, I'm that. I remember years ago, I'm not going to tell you when, but years ago, there was a prostitute in the city. I was 18 years. I'll tell you how old I was. I was 18 years of age. I saw her, and I said, you freaking whore. You know the first thing she said to me? Yeah, but I make money. What does one have to do with the other? You understand? You are still a whore. Okay, you make money. That justifies you being a whore? That's the mentality that these people have. That's the reality of it. You have to be able to get to the baseline level here in this matrix, and you will enjoy it better. That's just what it is. Same thing for immigrants. Now, everybody needs to get over themselves, woo-sah, woo-sah, and relax. And Mayweather, if this is the case, use some of the money to teach yourself how – well, you won't be teaching yourself. Someone else will be teaching you. Use some of that money to pay somebody to teach you how to read at a much higher level. That's all. That's all. Back over to you, Seraph, nerd.
Yeah, a couple of things. One, when you mentioned Mike Tyson, I think there might be some footage of him also, Captain, where he appears to have some difficulties. So I'm not absolutely sure how his deal is. I mean, I think there's a certain expectation or what is it that perhaps one of the few things that I actually admired about the Bush administration was this adage of the bigotry of low expectations. So I think there is a bigotry of low expectations when it comes to boxers. I was just looking up Lennox Lewis. I was always impressed by him. It appears that his education, at least it was beyond, I think he went to high – he definitely has a degree – not a degree, but a high school diploma from Ontario, Canada. He may be a different case because he's coming from the English experience. He's a British boxer. He sounds educated. That accent alone. And also his demeanor in the ring. I mean, he's a retired boxer, but I always liked his demeanor. He's always a calm, soft-spoken, well-spoken kind of guy. That might be more of his cultural background, more so than his educational background. But I'm also reading that he's heavily into chess and even sponsored some kind of chess competition where in his sponsorship, one of the players was able to go get a college education from it. So this is a thinking, pensive young man of color, or older man of color now because he is retired. But just to dovetail off of what you just said, since his business model is to be antagonistic. That's his business model. His business model is to stir it up, rightfully or wrongfully. I'm no Curtis Jackson fan, but we know this is his shtick, and it's been a shtick that he's been doing for more than a decade. One of his first records was called How to Rob. How to Rob was essentially a fantasy of him robbing all of the industry hip-hop artists at that time. So this is what he's about. He's never given this up. Now, what makes it troubling, like what the captain said, is these are two men of color of a certain financial status playing out their problems, their lack of friendship, whatever you want to call it, their dirty laundry, they're playing it out in social media and in conventional media. And the world just looks and laughs. These are two clowns, two minstrels. I mean, I can't take anything away from Mr. Mayweather's physical and athletic acumen. You cannot take anything away from his diligence when it comes to professional boxing. But his antics outside of the ring, this beef with T.I., this beef with T.I.'s wife, his burning of money in the club. I mean, he's a multimillionaire, certainly. Dare I say, hundreds of millions of dollars. But we've seen how this story goes. 25 years ago, Mike Tyson was a $300 million man. But without that education, with someone who's not really literate, very easy to take that money away from you. In response to 50 Cent's jabs at him, he produces two checks. I think one of the checks was a $72 million check. I guess it's supposed to be impressive. I mean, it's impressive, but if you can't read, I mean, an 8-year-old, I know 8-year-olds who can read fluently, Captain. If you can't read, if an 8-year-old can read, you have to be able to read. If you, in order to drive with some proficiency, reading roadside signs, reading maps. I mean, come on. This is the 21st century. This isn't post-bellum South. This isn't 1867. This isn't 1870. You know, this is 2014, and you can't read, but you produce a check. Now, what's also troubling is this is the millennial generation. This is a generation that is sociopathic. They're so entrenched in their technology. They have no social skills. So when you speak to folks, I've spoken to young folks that when you ask them to weigh in on this, they say, well, yeah, he showed a check, that's it. That, you know, they think that the check is, well, that answers it. No, it doesn't answer it. The check doesn't answer it. I mean, the captain talked about this in his inimitable wisdom. He said that when people are lacking, they throw out all that they can throw out. I make a lot of money. So what? You know, Mark Zuckerberg, he has enough common sense not to burn money in a club. How do you explain someone who's not even the same, who is wealthy? I should say rich. I think Chris Rock unpacked this in a routine years ago, that, you know, you have rich and you have wealthy. Floyd Mayweather is rich. Let's say he's worth $200 million, if that. But let's say he's in that rarefied air. Zuckerberg is worth, I think, upwards of $20 billion. Okay? If what makes you think you can burn money in a club and a billionaire is not doing that? That comes through someone who's probably an illiterate. Someone puts a contract, someone can throw a contract in front of you and take away your money with ease. And we've seen this from a historical perspective. We've seen it before. So not to really get into this too long, but I thought it was just shameful. And I thought that 50 Cent, you know, and even Charlamagne, to make fun of someone for this, fun of someone who cannot read, it's not really something you should do. I mean, this particular thing, it's something about it that is it's below dirty. It's below dirty. And for someone who does have all that money, he needs to get some tutoring.
Yep.
Get that straightened out. You were saying, Captain?
I said, I agree. Bring him right to your house, Mayweather. No big deal. In a year, you'll be all right. Year and a half, you'll be all right.
Yeah, I mean, listen, he has enough discipline. It takes a great deal of discipline to box at his level. So, you know, the mental toughness is there. It's just a matter of, you know, I mean, first of all, if I were in his position, I would want to do that anyway. Because if it comes down to gigs coming forward after boxing, which could also be six-figure, seven-figure paying gigs, you need to have your comportment. You need to have your erudition on point. So if you have a certain ability to speak, I mean, we've seen this before. We've seen people who had enough. And look at Strahan. They can't stop paying him. This guy was a football player, goes to Regis and Kelly, takes over that gig. Now he's got what, Good Morning America, Captain?
Yes, sir.
For general news.
He's all over the place. Doing well.
He kept it tight. He keeps it tight. He can speak. I mean, you know, he needs a straight, you know, Mayweather could move to the next level, but, you know, he's got that nonsense about him. You know, I don't trust the guy that burns money in a club. That right there, he became pretty much the top of the minstrel list on that alone. I can't even conceive of that. I mean, again, a billionaire does not burn money in a club. Why are you? Explain that to me. How does that work, Captain? A billionaire does not burn money in a club, but you have maybe a percent of his money. You have a percent of a billionaire's money, but you are so paid you can afford to burn money in a club. Really? Really? Captain?
I agree. I can't explain that one. So I can't explain that one at all. That's part of the cover-up, though. That's part of the cover-up. That's all what that is. It's part of the cover-up. Everybody has these issues that need to get over themselves. You know, you feel a lot better. Woo-sah. Get over yourself. Let it go. Learn to read. That's all.
All right, listen. let's go to another groove. When we get back, I think we have. I think I have maybe one more minstrel story in the tank, Mr. Suge Knight. It's only so much I can devote to minstrelsy, Captain. I only have so much tolerance. I mean, this is yet again, you know, a crocodile or an alligator will bite. They will act like a crocodile will act. And I think that Suge Knight has been missing those bullets for many times. Listen, he was supposed to have been shot when Tupac was killed. So this is to be expected. It's, you know, he had a lengthy reprieve from getting a bullet in his buttocks. So I don't wish death or harm on anyone, but, you know, sometimes this stuff is just so glaringly obvious that this is what will happen to you. I mean, who would not think that someone was going to put some lead in his pardon my French, hot lead in his ass at some point in his future? You don't need a crystal ball to even know that. So anyway, going to a quick groove, the latest from His Royal Badness, actually, a forthcoming album coming out September 30th. Actually, he has two albums coming out. This is called The Breakdown, Prince. We'll be right back, folks. And again, let's groove.
Walk through where there used to be a wall. I don't care, it's cool, as long as you catch me, baby. If there's ever a fall, closer to the breakdown.
All right, I had to let that ride, folks. That was the latest from Prince, The Breakdown. We should be expecting two albums next month, I think the 29th or the 30th of September. One is called Artificial Age, and the other one's called Plectrum Electrum. So he's out there, but he's still kicking. 37 albums. 37 albums. And, you know, folks nowadays can barely get past two or three if you're lucky. So 37 is an accomplishment once they gain his royal badness. Folks, this is the midweek and review edition of Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk. At the top of the show, we were talking about our experiences at Afropunk, and then we were also talking about one minstrel act, which is 50 Cent. Actually, you know, let's talk about a fight in Vegas with these two. Whatever. I believe that with a grain of salt. A 50 Cent versus Floyd Mayweather. Actually, a $12 million pot has been put out there for, you know, we saw how 50 Cent pitch. I don't think that's a good look. Anyway, moving on to the next minstrel show, the Video Music Awards, which I've yet to see. I know it's somewhere on the internet. I was busy listening to people who could actually perform music, not DAT machines and big butts moving around, shouting out Nicki Minaj. Anyway. I think this is an after VMA show, either an after or a pre-VMA gathering for Chris Brown. And I'm hearing, word on the street, is that someone was gunning Chris Brown and that Suge Knight took those bullets for him. I don't know. Maybe it's like that with Breezy. Maybe it's like that with him. But I'm more inclined to think that you know, listen, Suge Knight was in a car with Tupac, what was that? Now we're almost 20 years ago now. It's like 1995? Wow. Yeah, I think, 95, or it was 96. We're almost approaching 20 years since the death of Tupac Shakur. And he was driving the infamous BMW where Mr. Shakur was killed. So he literally dodged a bullet or bullets in that scenario. So it was bound to happen again. He's, you know, he was the former CEO of Death Row Records. Sometimes I just, I have no words. I mean, he said, according to TMZ, he was interviewed on TMZ. I think we spoke about this for like half a second months ago, he had a problem with the term African-American. You know, he said, "Well, I'm a nigga." That's what he said. "I'm a nigga. I'm not African. I've never been to Africa." Well, this is what happens to niggas. That's what it is. Some people are black American, taxpaying Americans, African Americans, people of color, and some people are self-confessed, self-avowed niggas. And this is what happens. And this is almost like a what is it? What is that movie franchise, Final Destination, Captain? You know, at some point, that match is going to strike a gas line. At some point, that open plug is going to touch a sink, a running sink. It's going to happen. I don't wish death on anyone or harm, but I guess it's just ponderous. You know, when I read this, Captain, when I saw this story, it becomes a comedy routine. It really does become a minstrel show. 25, 30 years ago, I think it's hard for people to even wrap their minds around a time when hip-hop artists were not the problem. Believe it or not, I know the captain can talk about this. It was a time when politicians, community leaders, they actually would go to the hip-hop community to calm the natives because the hip-hop artists were not the problem. We're talking about, you know, the 80s, late 70s, late 80s. But as time has gone on, a profile has been set up now. You almost have to be grimy. It somehow, in some insane way, it can work to your favor to be half criminal, have done some time in jail, have gotten shot. I mean, 50 Cent, a lot of his legend is because he was shot 9 times and survived. The Tupac legend was that he was shot, 4 times initially, survived that, and when he got shot again, many folks thought that he was going to survive this one. The hip-hop thing wasn't always attached to that. Stop the Violence movement from the late 80s. We interviewed legendary lyricist MC Light. She was a part of that. KRS-One was a part of that. That movement, again, the hip-hop artists were talking in a certain way. Now, you almost have to get shot in the buttocks in order to move some files, to move some MP3 files. It's the way it is. Captain, what are your thoughts about this tired, ponderous thing, shouting out Afropunk? It's ponderous.
I can remember going back to 1989. I was at Cold Chillin' Records, shouting out Mr. C, because Mr. C was A&R up there. They had 4 A&Rs, and you could walk right into the office, and you could see them with their, like, little booths listening to music. And Mr. C was telling somebody else, another A&R, he was saying to the person, he said, gangsters will not last in this business. That was Mr. C in 1989. That's what he was saying to somebody else. No, we heard it. It stayed in my head. Just stayed in my head. 1992, here comes Death Row Records. I said to myself, okay, when you start off that way with the gangster mentality, you do very good. It's like you run a fast 40-yard dash. It's like you ran a 3.8, and everyone else runs the 40-yard dash in 4.5. You're ahead of everybody, but it's a 400-meter race, all right? And then you start to fall apart down the road. Later on, the label fell apart. The same thing that gave you the boost in the beginning is the same thing that destroyed you. It's like putting nitrous into a car. You know, when you put nitrous into a car, you get a strong boost. You could bump up the horsepower really, you know, really high, really fast, but it also destroys the engine over a period of time. You're only supposed to use a little bit. When you use it a lot, you're constantly on nitrous, it destroys the engine. That's what a lot of these gangsters, when they come into the music business, that's what happens. That's why they self-destruct. And that's what Mr. C was saying at that given time. So it was inevitable that he was going to end up this way. It's just a matter of time. Matter of fact, sooner it should have happened, to tell you the truth, based on that principle. Gangsters do not last in the business. They have to straighten up somewhere along the line, or you're not going to last. Someone's going to shoot you, or the label's not going to have anything to do with you because you bring too much turmoil. Something is going to happen. You have to straighten up. Now, you can play like you're a gangster in your music to try and sell it, but you cannot really be gangster because you're not going to last. That's just what it is. And here you have a grown man running around still playing gangster. So how long before you actually get shot down entirely, that you're a totally dead man? The bullets are not going to keep missing. Sooner or later, that's it. It's going. You're just going to lose your life. That's just the reality of it. That's just what it is. Gangsters will not last in this business. And he knew what he was doing. Because in order to be that successful, it's not just luck. Of course, it's partly luck. Luck plays a role in everything. But he understood how to do the business also. There is some intelligence there. He is a minstrel, yes, but there is some business intelligence. Let me get it right. Let's get it right, Captain. There's some business intelligence. Overall intelligence might be low, but business intelligence. He does know how to run a business, and that's the reality of it. But he also knows how to run it into the ground because his overall intelligence is low. And that's what these gangsters do when they come into the business. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
I mean, you know, there'll probably be more forthcoming minstrel shows or minstrel, you know. Matter of fact, I'm gonna go talk about Mike Brown in a moment. His tragedy again. This story is just not leaving us. I mean, it's pretty amazing, Captain. I think I said it at the last broadcast that, you know, there's been so much analysis for one young man dying, and we seem to not to be able to, the media especially, they're not able to put this much time and effort when there are far more bodies that you can count. They're dying in equally tragic ways, and we can't commit that kind of time. Imagine if we did. If we did, that might ameliorate some of this stuff. But I'll get to that in a moment. You know, with this deal with minstrelsy and this story with Suge Knight, as I referencing before, it's just I can't believe this is like a continuing thing. You know, I'm so much of a supporter of this Afropunk thing, and a lot of it is because it is so radically different. Thousands of people are in attendance. True musicianship is just a different look. Even speaking to white people who were in attendance, and they were somewhat taken aback by the fact that, wow, I didn't know about this side of things. They were getting an education about this slice of black life. And there are, and ironically, there are other slices of black life. Heck, at the top of 2015, we will undoubtedly talk about the Schaumburg Black Comic Con. You know, I keep forgetting, there's actually three events that are big for me. Black Comic Con, Afropunk, and then New York Comic Con. So the Schaumburg 2015 is another event to talk about, and it's a lot of nebbish, nerdy, bespectacled black men and women, young, middle-aged, and older, that are debunking the stereotype. And yet, no one knows about this stuff. But we seem to know about Chris Brown and The Shines. I've got to keep it light, keep it 100. I'm going to speak in David Carroll speak because it's getting that bad. I'm just trying to figure out, when does this get boring? That's the part that boggles my mind, ladies and gentlemen. When I saw this story, I shrugged my shoulder and said, well, not like we haven't seen this before. We're back at this again. At some point, I would like to see and hear more people say, you know what? We know this is a blight on the black community, and we know this is a negative, but beyond the negativity, it's boring. Boring. It's boring. That's it, Captain. I would like for there to be a change because I can't believe that the folks themselves aren't tired of this. It's something we just keep on seeing repeatedly. No, I don't know. Okay. Back on
something?
Mr. Yeah, sure.
Can I
sure.
say something? All right.
Sure.
I'm going to go back to Afropunk. This is just something that has to be said because we've seen this before, Afro Nerd. Okay, now I'm addressing you thugs. You thugs, stay away from the Afropunk, please. We've seen this in Greek Fest. Greek Fest was very nice, okay? It was supposed to be for certain individuals, Greek Fest. What are the certain individuals? Either people who are going to college, people who graduated from college, or they will also let in some working class people who might not necessarily be college educated because they're not going to start any trouble. Once you let the thug element in, all of a sudden all hell breaks loose. We've seen this. with the Greek Fest in the black community, Philadelphia, and a few other places. We've seen it. You thugs, stay on your island. Leave the Afro-punk thing alone. Right now, it's still at its infant level state. It's growing bigger. If it gets really big, I still don't want to see you. But that's what you thugs start to do. It gets very popular. Hey, let's go to this. It's not your thing. It's not your crowd. You stay on your island. You understand? You stay on your island. Because when you come to something like that, you're not coming to behave. If you were a thug, which is an oxymoron, and you came to this place where Afropunk is, and you decided to behave, it wouldn't be really so much of a problem. You're like, oh, there's a thug. All right. He's acting okay. But that's not what that's not what thugs do. You make it uncomfortable for everybody else. So just stay away. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Yeah, you know, you just brought up something I wasn't thinking about, that that is kind of how it works. You know, I've seen this up close. Like you just, what you just mentioned with those other affairs, you know, with the black college function, they were really appealing to those who attended or had some familiarity with the black college experience. And then at some point, others started to, you know, invade. And my participation in those events were done. So I don't see that on the horizon at Afropunk, but I would detect it. If I saw it, I'm leaving. I'm not going to stay as long as I did. I stayed, what, hours at Afropunk. Something like that, I would leave immediately. So, I mean, I just hope that day doesn't happen because, you know, again, Angela Moore saying chocolate freaks and weirdos, I don't know if that crew would mesh well with thugs. It's a little too freaky for them, thankfully. But, Kathy, you have a knack for this kind of stuff. I hope that's not the case. I hope not. I want to talk about something, you know, a slightly different angle from this tragedy, which is Mike Brown. We know about the Ferguson, Missouri teen, 18 years of age, alleged to have been school-bound / college-bound and shot by a police officer. The circumstances are still somewhat unknown, although there are plenty of folks that will tell you with absolute certainty that he did no wrong, that his arms were up, that he was killed just like you would kill a rabid dog. I'm not comfortable in making those assertions because they have yet to be confirmed. I'm just amazed at how people say this is exactly what happened. Conflicting witnesses, the young man was seen on tape 10 minutes before his death, strong arm robbery situation. Some would liken that to being character assassination. Just cluing in on the audience to let you know how I think. Going back a year ago, maybe even going back six months ago, a year, 2 years, 10 years, that's character assassination. Going back 10 minutes, I don't know if that's character assassination. We speak in a very logical, cogent way at Afro Nerd. Again, let me repeat this. For those folks who are saying, this is character assassination. Okay, let's go back 6 months ago. Let's go back a year ago. Let's go back a couple of years ago. 10 minutes, not character assassination. Sorry. This reminds me a little bit, Captain, and I want you to wax on this as well. And you can diverge. I mean, we don't always have to be lock and key with each other. But there's a connection with how this particular story I'm going to get into, how it's very similar to the victimization story and the victimization scenario that ESPN sports analyst Stephen A. Smith, his fiasco a few weeks ago. Tell the truth. If you tell the truth, you will be vilified. Or you're going to be corrected, even if it's a truthful statement. So the New York Times is in trouble or they've been reprimanded because they told the truth about Mr. Brown. I want to read this from The Root, and I want you to give me your impressions on this thing, because I think we're getting to the point where we're so sensitive, and we're trying to position victims in a certain way, look insane. Now, this is from The Root. It says, on Monday, as the world watched Michael Brown's funeral in St. Louis and mourned with his family, the New York Times published an article about Brown's life that didn't sit well with too many people. The article, penned by John Elagon, covering the killing of Brown by Ferguson police officer Darren Wilson, received tons of negative feedback. Elagon described Brown as no angel, and pointed out that he dabbled in drugs, alcohol, and rap music. In the same vein, the New York Times also ran an article about Wilson in which more polite phrases such as well-mannered were used to describe the embattled police officer whose career has had its fair share of bumps. Demonizing Brown while painting a picture of Wilson as an angel set off a fiery barrage of comments and criticism toward Elagon and the New York Times. All right. The positioning of the officer may be problematic, but we did see footage of this young man robbing somebody minutes before his death. I mean, if you can't, I mean, what are you supposed to say exactly? I don't know. Now, maybe all of this has to be deconstructed, Captain. Maybe all of it has to be deconstructed because there is a legitimacy to another complaint about how white, and I think Sally V actually brought this to our attention, where you have white criminals that have committed heinous acts, and they're being described in a somewhat positive or even-keeled way with even pleasant-looking photographs. And black victims are not perceived that way. Now, so I can understand that, but at the same time, there's gotta be truth on all sides of the affair. I should say there's gotta be truth, but I just have a problem with, because we've seen this before, that now we can't speak honestly. And this is a complaint against the media in general, that the media, they're into selling advertising space, so they're positioning these stories. Captain, what are your thoughts about the Times? You know, maybe the imbalance of Wilson versus Brown, maybe that's an issue. That I can concede to. But, is it just that you're upset about the officer being perceived positively, or you don't want any negativity to be levied toward the victim, although he is no angel, or was no angel, tragically? We have some calls with Captain. Before we get, let me know what you think, and then we'll go to the calls.
Well, this is the way I see it. These media outlets do not look at these things objectively. And then when someone comes along and then decides to look at these issues objectively, they get called to the carpet because there's a slant most of the time. There's a slant. And that's the reality of the situation. Just as you said, what was supposed to happen in that article, they were supposed to say neither one was an angel. And if you look at Mr. Brown's track record and also the officer's track record, neither one of them are angels. There you go. That's the reality of it. That's looking at it objectively. But that's not what they do here. They're trying to slant. Because the kid, based on what, if you look at the kid's track record, Mr. Brown's track record, he's not an angel. Most people are not an angel. You know, but neither was the officer. And that's looking at it from an objective standpoint. That's not what these media outlets do. They look at it subjectively. Let's go with this. Let's go with that. let's try to always pull something out and make the white person look like they're totally on point, like everything is just rosy, even though they just slashed somebody's head off. That's what they do. That's a slant. Let's look at this objectively. And that's what they don't do. Back over to you, Sir Afflinerd.
Yeah, well, it makes this problematic also, Captain. This is coming from the Gray Lady, the code name for the New York Times. The New York Times is supposed to be a bastion of liberalism. So this is not from the the Wall Street Journal or the New York Post that, you know, they have unabashed conservative leanings. We're talking about the New York – this is the New York Times. So the New York Times, you'd figure this would have been more in the favor of Mr. Brown and not so much in the favor of the police. So that also makes it a little I don't know. That's a little bit bizarre. What do you think is going on there before we go to the calls? What do you think is going on there where you have a gain? You know, we received a critique for running a conservative / independent outfit here. Now, this is the liberal spot. So what's going on there? The New York Times is doing this.
That's the power there. Everything has to be nebulous, vanilla. You know, that doesn't work. That doesn't work for me. You don't get anywhere like that. That's the reality of it. You don't get anywhere like that. You don't get anywhere like that. You know, and that's what these media outlets are doing. You know, everything is a slant. Everything's a slant. Everything's a slant. If you say, let's just look at the facts. Oh, you can't do that. You can't do that. Let's go in with a hypothesis already. Let's tailor the narrative, and let's give the people this. No! Let's look at the facts. And this is why sometimes people don't like the captain, because I go, according to the statistics, and that shuts down everybody. And also, too, you have to know how to read statistics, because sometimes statistics can have a slant. So you have to remove that. Once you remove that, you say, these are the statistics based on this, based on that. That's why sometimes people don't like me, because now you have to look at it objectively. So if you go in with a hypothesis, you go in ready to tailor the narrative, come on, you get shut down. And that's what these media outlets are doing. They're tailoring the narrative. So you read that and you just go, you automatically, your emotional brain goes off and goes, oh, this guy's a this, or this one is this. Because that's the facts you're basing it off of. And then the people get all riled up based on that. Wrong. That's not what you're supposed to be doing as a media outlet. Just bring the facts to the table. That's it. Unless they're saying, this is my opinion now, then that's a little different. Back over to you, Sir Afflinerd.
Yeah, you know, and again, you know, this is a tragedy, one of many tragedies. The analyses relating to the Brown matter become problematic for me because, you know, we're going in 3 weeks with this heavy, with a heavy analysis on this incident, and the bodies will be piling up this weekend. I hope not. I hope not, but there's a precedence that's been set that Labor Day or any of these weekends that come up, Caribbean Day Parade, all this stuff, we've seen double-digit deaths, double-digit shootings, and it's another day. It's 24 hours passes, and it's gone. I'm seeing articles written by young mothers saying that I'm going to homeschool my child because of this. It's so difficult to raise a young black male. I'm going to do A, B, C, or D. I'm saying it's just the police that's making you do this. There are no goons out there. Captain, what happened to these disingenuous black people? The cops are raining bullets on you, but the goons weren't doing that before. Really? When did black people become this phony? I got to repeat this again. This is coming from the quote-unquote Uncle Tom. The goons just disappeared because the cops are raining bullets like snowfall. Come on. Really? Let's go to the calls. 703, Afternoon Radio. Tell us who you are, where you're calling from.
Hey, this is Bison for Life.
Hey, Captain, I don't like when, hey, Captain, I don't like when you use facts. Stop it. Yeah, a couple of things. I think we got to be careful, Afro Nerd. There's a term out now. It's called respectability politics.
Yep.
And this is where me and you will probably meet the fork in the road. I don't know if you've seen the Hollywood producer in Beverly Hills who was stopped.
I'm aware of it. You fit the description, though. That's where
it goes. What I'm saying is, you know, I don't care what you wear, what you get your degree from. You know, Michael Brown could have been on vacation from Hampton and went into that store and still met the same thing. I think that's where the disconnect is coming from. But I'm going to hop back to the hip-hop thing, which we all love to kind of beat with a stick. But I think we're all about in the same age group. And I think it all changed when F the Police came out by N.W.A. I think that was a seismic shift in hip-hop. And it's been sliding back ever since. But what I don't like is, why are rappers are the go-to cultural ambassadors for Black America and everything? I don't want to see Killer Mike on CNN.
Preach, brother.
You don't care how articulate he is. And this is where I get into the political thing, which I try not to avoid because I can be more nationalist when I want to be. But I think it's a couple things. One, first, we got to stop looking at white media for our validation. I mean, I know that New York has a million newspapers and a million news outlets, Deeper. And I know New York Times is the de facto paper that people go to. But, you know, you may want to check out Amsterdam News or whatever else up there to see from their standpoint. But the Times has a corporate master they gotta kowtow to. And in the sad part, a Black writer wrote that, but the editor let it through. So I don't know what happened between when he typed it out and it came out that way. So I would like to see, like, a diversity in some of the media that we kind of cite in regards to how we are portrayed. I think if you start looking at other types of media, you may see a shift in some of this. I mean, that's why I just make myself, I get Black media. We can critique it all night long, but sometimes I want to hear Black problems from a Black perspective. I don't want to look through a white lens for it. But at the end of the day, Diva, you're right. We're going to be doing this again in a few weeks or a few months. There'll be another name for it. There'll be another name, and we'll see another funeral. And, you know, people, you know, MSNBC, you know, having town hall meetings. And then we go to the next one. We got some healing to do in our community. That's going to require Black men to become men again. I'm going to stop here. I'm going to get off the porch right now. I mean, get off the lectern right now. But I think it's beyond politics. I don't think this is a political issue. I think this is a morals issue. I think it's a Black society issue that we have just dropped the ball, and we're letting the babies raise the babies, and this is what you get. Now, Michael Brown being shot in the street, that's a whole separate entity. At the end of the day, those cops, and it's starting to come out with some of these cops, the views that they hold, you know, I don't even see that cop getting convicted the way it's going to play itself out. Then what are we going to do?
Well,
I'll say this much, Bison.
I do feel, honestly, that there's a slight inkling of a different perspective. It seems like Black folks are starting to wake up a little bit because now I'm hearing more and more outlets, more and more Black voices starting to challenge the convention. The fact that you saw Reverend Sharpton and Reverend Jackson not necessarily being received so warmly by the folks at Ferguson. Some folks, we saw this in Chicago also. But some of these folks are starting to question the efficacy of the leadership. You know, and I'm starting to hear more people talk about some of this dysfunction. I'm like, wait a minute. You can't keep on having this passion when it's a white hand pulling the trigger, when there's 50 black hands in a weekend pulling a trigger on 50 black men and women and babies. I mean, the numbers just aren't matching. So people are starting to deconstruct some of the BS. They're starting to question it. And when you talked about respectability politics, I didn't have enough time, but I have a clip from a recent Kokomo town hall devoted toward the black image, or black male image, and they were getting into some of this respectability. Now, this is, you're right. This is where we probably will part ways a little bit, because I'm not sure, so sure if it's respectability politics, because some of the people were parents. These are parents of in their 30s, 40s, and 50s, and they seem to be kowtowing to the youth. They're weighing in the same way that the captain, the state police captain, weighed in about his son being in his house, saying that, you know, my son wears his pants a certain way and has tattoos, but I accept that. He's my son. I love him. I'm like, no. The Oracle was not accepting stuff from me. As long as you live in this in his house, you're going to have to abide by certain rules, and I understood that. So I'm confused by why all of a sudden now the new wave parents can't seem to control their children. They let their children run the show. And if someone makes a statement about, and using the term respectability politics on this show, they said that, well, you could get shot in a suit too. Like this whole thing about if you wear a suit and if you dress a certain way, things could happen. You know what? I believe wearing that suit is damn near close to having a bulletproof vest. And I tell you why. There's the exception and there's the rule. I'm not seeing a whole bunch of people wearing Armani being laid out in the street the same way I see folks dressed in a certain way, like Mr. Brown or like the younger folk. If we're going to be honest, you're going to get an exception, but that's not the rule. So when people say, yeah, you know, no matter how you're dressed, no matter how you speak, you're still black and things can happen. Oh, yeah, I'm not going to disagree with that. They could, but are they happening in the same numbers? No. You're not seeing a Wall Streeter being laid out prone the same way you see. You will see a black body. When people, it's amazing they hear the passion and how upset in that program. I'm going to play it on Saturday. This young woman was so, you know, they had him out for hours and they treated him like a dog. Where have you been? We've seen this on countless nights in Chicago, in Oakland, in Brownsville, in Camden, and you're not that passionate. White hand pulls the trigger, now you're passionate. You cannot deconstruct that logic, Bison. It cannot be deconstructed. I'm sorry. And I want to see that man prone on the ground in a morning. There's the exception. There's the rule.
Can I interject something?
Sure.
Wearing a suit might get you stopped by police. But the police, and I'll make it as a blanket statement, I'm going to make it, and you're not supposed to make blanket statements. They're not shooting black men in suits. They're not doing that. They may stop you. You may get stopped. Let me see some ID. Let me see some identification. Because I've been stopped in a suit. I've been stopped. But they're not shooting black men in a suit. You know, it doesn't happen. I'm making a blanket statement this time. And if you don't, and whoever doesn't like it, too bad. That's all. That's all I got to say.
It's being phony. When I heard this, I had the clip isolated, but we only have a minute. Now it gets cooking. It starts percolating towards the 2 minutes of the show. But I have a clip where someone makes a statement, and you can get shot in a suit. okay, when have we seen that? How often is that happening? I see more. When I saw people looting, I saw bandanas over mouths, and I saw underwear and pants sagging. I saw that. And when I see the police blotter, I see a certain profile. I don't see the Wall Street dressed Howard, Harvard, Morehouse, Hampton, Lincoln University educated black man getting shot in his buttocks the way that Suge Knight was shot. I don't see it. I saw the picture of Chris Brown circa 2014, not the one circa 2005. We got to stop falling for the okey-doke, and we got to start being honest. It's a phony statement. They still shoot you in a suit. When have we seen that? Someone looking like Obama laid out in the – come on, man. Come on, bud. You ain't seen that. You ain't seen that. It ain't happening. It's an exception, not the rule. Listen, continue supporting us. Continue supporting Afropunk. We love getting into this stuff. We love mixing it up. I'm going to give you more prints. That man wears heels. I haven't seen him get shot yet either. Clouds, also new by Prince. Check him out next month. It's been real. Saturday, 6 o'clock.
You were given put you in suspended animation for quite some time. Well, in fact, about 45 years. But where you are now is a place that does not require time. That being said, you are completely safe.
And we're here to help you. You should never underestimate the power of a kiss on the neck when she doesn't expect. A kiss on the neck when she doesn't expect. A kiss on the neck.